This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Coming to the bat for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves and provides strategies and solutions for your biggest financial challenges.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you very much. Welcome, folks. It is the Ray Program, as you heard the man, 844-729-7469, the one talk show in America you got to tune into because we help you make better money moves. One of those moves, of course, stop listening to people on the radio and television and the pundits that write about this stuff because they don't know what they don't know. Welcome to the show. That's really what I want to talk about. I want to take a little bit of a trip back in history about a year ago. So sit back and relax. It is the Ray Program starting up with y'all nationwide and coast to coast and online all around the world. Hello, Jim Stewart. How you doing, buddy?
Everything is perfect.
Everything is beautiful.
It's going to get better, though.
In Jimmy's life. I saw this. I pulled this up on CNN Money. Just for the fun of it. Because if you haven't noticed, since the election of Mr. Donald J. Trump, the market has been on fire. Fire. And there's a whole lot of people, and I'll quote from some of these studies and reports and so forth in a minute. People think it's not going to end anytime soon. Yeah, now keep one thing in mind. I make no predictions about the market, past, present, or future, because that's a fool's game. But I went online just to see what the attitude was this time last year, because it's always fun to do that, to see what the pundits were saying. And Matt Egan wrote at CNN Money, and this is one of like 10,000 articles of people pushing the panic button and getting out, et cetera, et cetera. But allow me to read from a year ago. Because you kind of know what's happened over the last year. If you don't, I'll tell you in a minute. It wasn't just you, he said. Virtually all investors lost money during the atrocious month of January. Okay? This was dated February 1, 2016. So it's a little bit older than a year, but not that much. He goes on, over 93% of investors were in the red last month, according to data shared exclusively with CNN Money by OpenFolio, an app that allows people to see how their investment portfolios stack up with others. Deep fears about the crash in oil prices and turbulence in China took hold of the stock market in January. The Dow lost 5.5% of its value, the index's deepest monthly drop since the market freakout in August. But the typical investor fared even worse, losing 6.3% of his or her portfolio in January. Quote, a miserable start to the year, end quote, is how Bespoke Investment Group summed it up to their clients on Monday. Thankfully for investors, January 2016 is now in the history books, as is February, March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, and December for us right now. But I want you to think back to how you were feeling. Your 401k just got slammed. And just about everybody on planet Earth that was an investor globally had gotten slammed, and the attitudes weren't so hot. They went on to say this. Some investors did manage to elude the carnage in the stock market by going to cash. Yeah, that's always smart, isn't it? Right after you get shellacked. Oh, I got my butt kicked, so I'm going to leave the stock market now just to watch everybody else around me who got their butt kicked and didn't sell make bank. OpenFolio said those who made money in January held an average of 19% in cash compared with 9% for those who lost money. I wonder what they're saying today. They go on. Investors yanked $2.9 billion from U.S. stock funds last week. Remember, this is February 1, 2016. Investors yanked almost $3 billion from U.S. stock funds, marking the seventh week of outflows out of the past eight, according to Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Money is fleeing to safe haven government bonds. For instance, municipal bonds have enjoyed 19 straight weeks of inflows. So I just ask you one question. You might recall that bonds got their lunch handed to them from about July on from last year. So all this money that fleed the stock market and went into the bond market, how well did it do? And if this isn't a lesson of turn off the noise and forget market timing, I don't know what is. As of February 10th, 2017, I have the data in my hands. The one-year return for the Standard & Poor's 500, 25.07%. Here's my question. All those people that went to cash, did they stay in cash? I'll bet you a lot of them did. All those people who protected their money, who went into treasuries, how well did they do? By the way, about 0.81%, according to this data that I'm holding in my hand. Of course, it depends on, you know, the maturities and which kind of bonds you bought and so forth. But let's face it, there's no bond in America in the last year that's done anywhere near 25%. The Dow did even better, 27%. And they talked about how the NASDAQ got really creamed during that time period. I forget exactly what it was. Oh, yeah, the NASDAQ, which fell nearly 8%, they said, amid its worst month since 2010. Ah! Don't buy those technology stocks. Look at how poorly they did in the crash of 2000. The NASDAQ is up 33.86% over the course of the last 12 months. 12 months, 33%. If you're like me and you say, you know what, I'm pretty happy if the stock market will do 8% a year consistently. We know it doesn't. We know it goes up 30% one year and down two and et cetera, but on average, if I can get 8% per year, it's up almost 34%. I've gotten 4 years of my goals and objectives in the last 12 months, while all these bozos that pulled their money out of the market earned 1%. It'll take them 34 years to catch up to what I got in 1 year. Do you follow what I'm saying? Now, on that same subject, what's the street thing? I like when they say the street. What is the street thing? That's Wall Street, okay? The street thinks there's euphoria today. And this article, published February 13th, as euphoria overruns Wall Street, one bank sees S&P 500 at 3,000 by 2019. That's 2 years. Right? 2017, 2018, yeah. By 2019, we're expecting another, 600-700 points. Well, is that reasonable? Yeah, I think so. 30% is a 15% gain in the next 2 years. If these guys are right, what the heck are you doing getting out of the market now? People ask me all the time, okay, what are you doing, Ray? I'm not doing anything. If I were going to do anything at all, it would be value average a little bit of my gains. But when I value average, you must understand that most of the time, that will cost me in return. It just makes me sleep a little bit better at night. For example, what do I mean by that? Well, the market did 34% over the course of the last year. So anything I had that was in large cap or, you know, large blend, whatever the S&P is, and I went into the year expecting 8%, I got 32. So based on my imprecise calculation, I've got 20-25% more money in my stock portfolio than I had bargained for a year ago. All right, so maybe what Ray would do is I'd say I've got some house money. I've been playing blackjack. I'm up on the tables. I got a bunch of house money. Let me take some of that house money and put it in my pocket for the rainy day and let the rest ride and see how I keep doing. That's what I would do. That doesn't necessarily mean that a 25 or a 35 or even a 45-year-old should do that. They might continue to let it ride. Moral of the story, A, don't time the market, and B, don't believe everything you read, see, or hear on programs like this. We'll be back. Is that my buddy Mark Lindsay? Is that who that is? Yeah. If I could grow a ponytail, if my wife would let me grow a ponytail with bangs, I'd probably look like Mark Lindsay.
Does your hair still grow that long?
Yeah, of course. I still have hair. Are you jealous? Steve Allendorf in the house. Hey, Steve, how you doing,
buddy? Doing good, thanks.
I was just talking about timing the stock market. And, you know, the idiocy of trying to time the stock market. And what I did is I went back and I looked at an article that was written February of 2016, you know, right after the shellacking that we all took early in the year, and people were bailing out billions of dollars, vacated mutual funds, and everybody was freaked out. Don't you remember? And of course, the market's up 25%, the NASDAQ's up 33%, and the moral of the story is only morons try to time the stock market. Because a lot of really smart people were saying it was time to be cautious. Let's raise some cash. You know, raising cash would have been the worst thing you could have done in retrospect. The bond market is similar to that, is it not?
Well, I mean, it's the same in the mortgage market. You know, I have people that call up and go, well, you think rates should go down, and should I wait, and what's the best time to refinance? And, you know, the bottom line is if and when you catch the bottom of the market, it's not because you're smart, because you're lucky. I mean, even those of us that are in the profession, and if we want to refinance or buy, we have no idea where we're going to hit the bottom.
Ago, I was bugging Johnny, my former producer, about, you know, refinancing, and I bugged him, and I bugged him, and I bugged him, because I said rates are going to keep going up, and they kept going down and down. He kept procrastinating and procrastinating. Finally, you got a hold of him, and then he had to get something from his CPA or whatever, and that procrastinated even further. And I'm yelling at him like on a daily basis, you got to get this done because rates are going to go up soon. And he timed it so that he got like the best rate you could possibly
get. He got pretty darn close. I think I remember we got Johnny 3.5%. I think the lowest we saw it was 3.25 with 40% equity. So he got lucky at the bottom, and that's the bottom line. It's the same when you're investing. You have no idea when the market's going to go up, when it's going to go down. It doesn't matter who you listen to. Nobody can predict what's going to happen.
Well, speaking of prediction, Larry Fink, the CEO of Blackstone, I talked about this yesterday. This is a pretty smart guy and the most successful, arguably, the most or one of the most successful investment management firms in the world. And he ain't buying this interest rate at 3% or 3.5% or 4% 10-year. He's thinking it's going back down below 2%, which I know would bring a smile on your face.
Not just my face. There's a lot of people in the industry that it would bring a smile to. And I think what's happening right now is this: we're going through the change of leadership, we're going through what might happen, and we saw the increase in the interest rates. They've remained fairly steady. You know, we were hearing, for instance, today Janet Yellen said we're going to increase short-term rates. Well, duh. I mean, you know, we were told that we were probably going to see a couple of changes, but because she made that mention on her little speech this morning, the mortgage market is what we would call tanking, meaning we're going to see rates move up a little bit. I've had some people that have said, hey, let's just wait and see what happens. I don't think we're going to see it come down to where we had it at its lowest levels, but I don't think I'd hit the panic button at this point.
It just defies logic that one would want to postpone doing a mortgage, say, with this so-called uncertainty, just because Larry Fink thinks interest rates may go lower, because if Janet Yellen is right and they're going to raise rates 2, 3, 4 times over the course of the next year, you may see that 10-year somewhere in the 3.25% range a year, 1.5 years from now, and you may never see rates at 4, 4.25.
Yeah, or what we may see is it may take a year or 1.5 years for the rates to come down. So if it makes sense for you to refinance now, if it makes sense for you to go ahead and purchase, do it now, because if the rates come down, you can always refinance.
Okay, so I hear about all these deals where you pay no points, no fees, no nothing, and you get this really great rate. Can you address that? I mean, is that a real deal?
Well, when they're going over that we can do the loan with no points and no fees, whether they use the term great rate or not, the way that it works in the industry is that lenders will give us a range of interest rates that we can quote from. The lower the rate, the more it will cost you in either points or fees. The higher the rate, the less in points or fees. So can you do a no-point loan? Absolutely, where you have lender fees. Can you do a no-point, no-fee loan? Yes, you can. Rate will be a little bit higher. Does it make sense to do that? A lot of it is based on your situation. And I've done this for years, and we've talked about it on the show, is mathematically, you can take a look at what does it cost us to do a specific rate, what is the difference in payment and interest, and what's that payback period of time that, for instance, let's say we take a higher rate and no fees. When does it equal out if you're to take a lower rate where you maybe pay fees but no points, or you pay points? In most cases, it's about 3 to 5 years.
You know, what's interesting is when you did my variable interest rate loan, of course, we sold the property. We owned it for almost 10 years. And I think you did a 5-year loan, as I recall.
We did initial, yeah, because we did the same loan. It was a 5-year
You and I had
fix.
The same loan. As I said, I want whatever you have for you.
Right.
Right? Because you got to eat your own cooking. Right?
Yeah, and it was a different loan at that time, but we both had higher mortgages.
On it. I mean, when the rate, after 5 years, I ended up with like a sub 3% rate, yeah, or something like that. It was just crazy. And I paid some upfront points, as I recall, to keep the rate lowered. I said I would rather pay the fees up front and go for the lower rate, which actually worked out to my advantage over a 10-year period.
Over the long year period of time. Because at that point, and we don't see this anymore, but on those particular programs, you had a fixed rate and then it rolled to an adjustable, and that adjustable was based on an index,
right,
and then a margin. The margin is what the lender makes above whatever the index is. And at that point, we paid the higher fees to get the lower margin, so that when your loan went to the adjustable phase, that rate from that fixed rate to that adjustable stayed lower for a longer period of time.
That was a jumbo mortgage.
Correct.
So we're talking about serious thousands of dollars that saved me over the course of umpteen years.
Well, I mean, I did the same loan, the 5-year fixed. At that point when we did it, I think the rate was in the low 5% range. And like you, once my loan went from the fixed to the adjustable, my interest rate fell below 3%.
Right.
So my mortgage was probably 40% less after it went to the adjustable,
yeah,
phase.
Exactly.
Now, we're not going to see that now. Short-term rates have gone up. So we're going to see that people that have adjustables, who had those low rates, 2.5, 3, 3.25, on their next adjustment, they're going to potentially see their rates at 4%, maybe a little bit higher.
And this is why you need to get a hold of this dude, like I did and my entire family has done for years, Steve Allador, Loan Financial Planner, because that's exactly what he does. He sits down with you, either on the phone, because he works nationwide pretty much, or face-to-face, and he helps you get the best deal. But more importantly, is he explains why it's the best deal for you and your circumstance. 888-563-1070. There's some false advertising going on that I want to talk with Steve about when we come back. Make sure you stick around for the SEGI with Steve Allador, theloanfinancialplanner.com.
Oh.
House is rocking now, folks. Welcome back to the Ray Program with Steve Allendorf, LoanFinancialPlanner.com. We were talking a little about advertising. And, Steve, the other this is driving me crazy. The other day, it was actually a couple weeks ago, I got one of those things. You know, the advertising world is different. Everything's online. There are pop-up ads. I'm hiring, for example, my good friend Kevin Viner, who's one of the finest magicians, mentalists, illusionists in the world. The guy's unbelievable. He's a young kid, 30 years old. Anyway, so I was showing our church group that we're hiring him for a little video or whatever. Every time I go online now, his face pops up.
Uh-huh.
There's these pop-up ads, and it's Kevin, which is fine because I love the guy. He's a terrific guy. But the other day, I clicked on something. I have one of those autofill deals. They ask for your email address, and the next thing you know, it gives them all my data, and I forget what I was looking for. It's probably a Papa John's pizza or something. What are you guys laughing at, you know? You got to have pizza every once in a while, crying out loud. And now every day I get tons of emails from Papa John's. But, I mean, I'm getting offers from Popular Mechanics. What, are you crazy? Debt consolidators, student loan debt. Do you guys realize how old I am and how long it's been since I nearly defaulted on my student loans? I had to pay them back, though, because you can't default on those babies. The best arrabbiata sauce, I got one of those.
Was it good? Did you get it, actually?
No, because I've got two of my favorites. Oh. And I'm telling you, Steve's, what's the guy, the Italian guy from The Godfather? Steve, I forget his last name. His sauce is fantastic in the jar. And Rao's, the famous Italian family from New York.
Forget about it.
Yeah, I'm telling you. Why spend 6 hours making the Sicilian sauce when you can just go buy it?
Yeah.
It's a little expensive, but yeah, it's easy.
Can.
Anyway, enough about food. I hear these advertisements. You could save hundreds of thousands, millions, billions of dollars if you call me the mortgage professional dude or whatever.
I mean, I'm seeing it, you know, for instance, you know, my front page is MSN. And,
well,
you know,
that's problem.
And I know that's my problem. And I see the pop-ups, you know, homeowners can save hundreds of thousands of dollars, pay your mortgage off, you know, in half the time. And it's like, okay, is this interesting information that I may not know? Let me do a little bit of research. And I click on the link, and it directs me to them talking about the HARP program, the Home Affordable Refinance Program. That was,
people are underwater. That's the underwater one.
Yeah, it was designed when we had the crash. Basically, that program was designed for people that were underwater, although you didn't have to be underwater to use the program. But it was a program where if you had a Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac loan originated prior to June 1st, 2008, there was a lot more flexibility in you being able to qualify for a mortgage. You could be underwater. You could have high debt-to-income ratios. You may not need to do an appraisal. But I'm going to tell you that, and I did a ton of those loans when the program came out and probably for the next 4 or 5 years. But that program's almost 8 years old. Most people have either refinanced out or sold their properties. And those that haven't, that have mortgages that are 8 years old, probably don't have a Fannie Mae loan because up to that particular point, the programs that got people into trouble were the portfolio loans.
Right.
You know, certain the NAGAM loans that weren't Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. But the bottom line is, let's even say that you still do have one of those loans.
The HARP loan.
You have a loan that was generated by Fannie or Freddie prior to June 1st, 2008. It maybe your rate's at 5% or 5.5%. You maybe will get a point lower in interest rate because actually the HARP loan's a little more expensive than standard loans. And you're not going to save hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, how
you're
can
not
they say
pay...
that, though? I mean, is it just to try to get you to click and they get a lead out of it that they can hammer you with for the next 100 years?
Absolutely, because I figured, all right, let me follow the lead. Let me see what happens. So I started filling some stuff out, wondering if they were going to give me some information on how to find out.
Oh,
because,
don't do it.
Well,
don't
no,
do it.
I went to the point of inputting in my detailed information on my mortgages and my email address. I stopped at that point.
Did you give them your email address?
No, absolutely not. I won't.
Because I get thousands of emails now.
Which
from
is the reason why I don't.
Because I'm an idiot.
I was hoping what they were going to do was say, you can go to the Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac website, because you can do this on your own. and plug in your info. Just basically, it will have your first name or last name, your property address, and the last four digits of your social. And then you click on it, boom, and it tells you. Yes, your loan is owned by Fannie Mae. Yes, your loan is owned by Freddie Mac, or it's not, and when it was originated. And that will tell you whether you qualify for HARP. So the bottom line is what I got all out of all of that is that based on the fact that rates have gone up, there's a lot less people right now that are refinancing or purchasing. This is a way for mortgage companies to get your information in to start hitting you up.
Okay, let's talk about rates real quick for people out there that are in a position where they need to refinance, want to refinance, or want to buy, or as we've talked many times before, want to help a child or a grandchild get into a home. Because if Trump succeeds in this 3%, 4% growth thing, and we do have inflation, that means property values are going to continue to appreciate.
And we're going to potentially see interest rates go up unless things change, and we were talking
right,
about this.
Right, so you got to buy now.
Yeah, so 30-year fixed rates, you're looking in the low 4% range. That'll vary based on purchase rate and term, cash out, and your credit scores.
Are you making recommendations of 30 years, or do you like going with a shorter one and take your chances?
I'm going between the 30 and the 7-year. A lot of people qualify easily on the 30, want that comfort zone on the 30, plan on being in the home for a long time. That's potentially an excellent option. But I'm getting both people who are looking to refinance and purchase, potentially looking at the 7-year, because there's upwards to a 3/4% reduction in interest rate for that program.
If you bought an investment property on the 7-year,
a little bit more difficult to get a good rate on an investment property on the 7-year. You're probably only looking at maybe about a 1/4-point difference.
So it doesn't really make sense if you're going to hold that thing long term.
You want to go pretty much with a 30. You know, 15 years are out there. You know my feeling on the 15 years. And even the 10 years, because we hear advertising, you do a 10-year loan, you pay your mortgage off in significantly shorter period of time. Absolutely.
Well, I hear those ads, too. And it's like, but there's some magic pill you take to pay your mortgage off in 7 years.
Well, you know, if you've got a $100,000 mortgage, you can maybe do a 10-year loan and swallow the payment. But, you know, standard mortgage loan amount in California, you're probably looking mid-300s, low-400s. The difference on a payment between a 10-year loan and a 30-year loan might be $1,000. To me, that's putting potentially a noose around your neck. If something happens down the line in your lifestyle, you lose a job, your wife loses a job, you decide that you don't want to pay your mortgage off, that you'd rather have more money to invest in the market, to have fun with, to enjoy your life with. That's why, to me, it's real important to look at all the scenarios, not just what sounds good, but where things may happen and go down the line.
All right, this is why Steve Allendorf's on this program and has been for 2 decades now. Steve Allendorf, the Loan Financial Planner. You can get a hold of him at loanfinancialplanner.com. If you're in Southern California, this is an absolute no-brainer, but he either does it himself or he has contacts nationwide that can help you all across the country. Loanfinancialplanner.com, 888-563-1070. Is the number. Are you going to keep that big monster house you have up there in Ramona?
I've got no choice.
You've got no choice.
I've got no choice.
So the little lady wants to stay in
the big
house?
Well, no, not necessarily. You know, I built the home in 2004. I'm one of the few who are still a little bit, I know, who are a little bit underwater. But, you know, I'm comfortable with the house.
Yeah, so, I ended up doing the same thing. I mean, you and I have been living in parallel universe.
Yes.
Only your hair is a lot grayer than mine. Mine's getting there.
Yeah, no, it is. But you don't use any color, do you?
No, of course
you
not.
You don't? Okay,
no,
good.
I would never color my hair.
Okay, good.
I color my world. That's a good song, by the way, fellas, but not my hair.
I always told myself as long as the hair was on my head, I didn't care what color it was.
Steve Allendorf, he is the man. Loanfinancialplanner.com, 888-563-1070. I love when you come on this program because you take complicated stuff and you make it simple and easy for people to understand.
That's the most important thing. And I will spend a lot of times about an hour or two putting together a scenario for a borrower so that I go through the points knowing that they don't know the business like I do.
I've seen you do that and not get a loan. In fact, I've seen you talk people out of getting a loan. You've talked some of my own family members out of getting a loan?
We mathematically look at it. If it doesn't make sense, we can see why, but then it also gives us the map that down the line it might make sense, and that makes it really easy for the borrower to understand why. And that, to me, is really the most important part.
All right. That's Steve. Thank you, buddy. I appreciate it. We'll see you next week again. Steve Allendorf, loanfinancialplanner.com. Do yourself a favor, even if you're not in the market to refinance, he does loan financial planning that has to do with all of your loans and all of your other areas of mortgage and debt financing, credit scores, all of that stuff. You want to get a hold of Steve Allendorf, 888-563-1070. Take a quick break. Come back with emails. I promise to get to at least one, maybe two or three. When we return, right here on the Ray Lucia Show.
Cut my hair. It happened just the other day.
Stephen Stills and the boys from Crosby, Stills, and Nash. Boy, that brings back some fond memories, fellas. Nice job. Oh, coloring my hair. No, he said cut my hair. All right. Next, you'll be playing Helplessly Hoping, another great Crosby, Stills, and Nash song. That's why I love coming here today, speaking with you and the boys playing some of the oldies but moldies, but they're just great, great, great songs. Thank you. And again, thank you to Steve Allendorf. Guy's just brilliant. He does a phenomenal job, doesn't he?
It's incredible. I mean, that's the way it should be. That's the way.
But most mortgage people, you know, they got the green eye shades and like boring as heck, and all they want to do is sell you a mortgage instead of actually plan for what is the best thing for you to do with all of your debt, because there's consolidation, there's all kinds of stuff that Steve does that he doesn't talk much about here, and I give him way more time than I should, but I do that for a reason. That's because he's just so dang good.
Mortgages have a dramatic impact on your whole financial cash flow.
Yes. Okay. Speaking of a dramatic impact, I'm about to have that for a couple of people here on the email, so hit it, boys. Oh, yes. By the way, we got a return call. I did it during the break with Norman from yesterday. Remember Norman who called this time yesterday?
Trust, yeah.
And he was talking about a bypass trust, but I didn't want to, you know, upset the apple cart and change gear. So I did take him off the air. And he asked a good question. So let me just start with this, because when we talked with Norman yesterday, he had one of those old AB trusts, and the person died, whoever it was, and the bypass trust does not get gets a step up in basis on the first death, but then after the beneficiary dies, it doesn't receive a step up in basis. But his question today on that related topic was, what happens to the income when the money goes into the dead person's bypass trust? The income goes to the live person that's left over, right? I'm trying to make this simple. What's the tax treatment on the income, he asked, which is a good question. And it's no different if the trustee sells an asset at a capital gain, that gain will be taxed to the individual at capital gains rates, which could be as low as zero, or here in California, you could be as high as almost 30% when you add them all up together. If it's interest income or from taxable bonds and so forth, it would obviously be taxed at ordinary income rates. If it's income from a tax-free municipal bond, then the income would be tax-free. So there's really no difference. But the key thing to remember, and so many people have bypass trusts today. Remind me, we'll do a segment on this sometime because it is important, but you should know I dumped mine several years ago to a disclaimer trust because I happen to trust my wife and she trusts me. Why she trusts me, I don't know, but she does. The bypass trust protects your ultimate beneficiaries, like your kids, from your spouse's next spouse, among many other things. That it used to be a big estate tax savings thing, but that's pretty much down the tubes now, unless you're worth $20, $30 million. Hit it, boys. Did you already hit it?
Yeah.
Well, hit it again. There you go. I'm sorry. That's better.
Reboot.
No, I didn't remember. I can't hear today. It's my bad ear. Okay, you can cut it off now. It's fine. Stop it. Thank you. Michael. I get no respect. Michael, I would like to know how I can invest in a REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. I'm selling a home and would like to do a 1031 exchange into a REIT. I would like to talk with an advisor. Okay, well, if you talk with an advisor that knows what they're talking about, they will tell you that you cannot do an exchange from a home into a REIT. Okay, now first things first. Is this your principal residence? I don't know, but you said a home. If it's a rental home, then that is an investment property. And in order to do a 1031 exchange from an investment property, you must exchange to another investment property. All sounds copacetic, except that it's not a like-kind exchange when you add a REIT into the equation, because an investment property like a home is real estate. A REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust, is tantamount to a stock. So you cannot exchange real estate into a stock. Now, you can exchange a real estate home into raw land, that's still real estate. A home into an apartment building, that's still a like-kind exchange. And remember, it's equal to or greater than value, equal to or greater than debt when you do this exchange. So it's a little bit technical. You do need a financial advisor. The financial advisor needs to have been schooled on 1031 exchanges. And there's lots of different ways to get screwed on this deal. The Starker exchanges and all that, which are very sexy, but risky, and you need to know exactly what you're doing, and they're costly. And sometimes, Jimmy Stewart, it's better to just sell and pay your tax bill.
Right, because when it goes bump in the night, it really hurts.
It really does. But the moral of the story here is, and if it's a principal residence, by the way, he says I'm selling a home, which if it's a vacation home, can't do an exchange. If it's a principal residence, can't do an exchange. Okay, if it's principal residence, you probably get a tax-free $500,000 anyway if you're married, right? So I don't know what your definition of a home is. When I talk about my home, it's my principal residence, not a rental home I might have in Austin, Texas. But that's that. That's Michael. Row the boat ashore. Marky Mark is next. Was that Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
That's the same guy?
Yeah, sure.
Wow. He's a much better actor and a lot wealthier now than he was when he was a rapper. Mark, Ray, what kind or type of investment would you not own? Great question, Mark. There's a lot of things that I would own if I really knew who was behind them. For example, I wouldn't go out and own a private investment unless I really had confidence in the people with whom I am investing. I wouldn't own penny stocks unless I was just going to go to Vegas and gamble. Doesn't mean I wouldn't ever gamble, because, you know, gambling in the stock market's a little bit of fun. If you scraped off 5% of your portfolio and did some gambling, it wouldn't bother me that much, as long as you gamble with the money you expect to lose. Now, I'm taking my wife to Las Vegas this weekend. We will discuss our budget for having fun. Fun for her is sitting in the room reading a book. Cost me nothing. Fun for me is playing a little blackjack. I have to tell you how good I am at that on another show. Thanks for tuning in. God bless. Make it a great day. Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, taking calls from across the nation and answering questions about your biggest financial challenges. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of this station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions at 844-RAY-SHOW or online at RayLucia.com.